you also have to remember that solar panels and wind turbines, they require a lot of minerals to make those materials.
Alaskans weigh in on President Obama's message in the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, September 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Kotzebue prepares to become the first Arctic community in the U.S. to host a sitting president.
It's such an honor for him to come to our village to see firsthand our concerns as a Native community up here.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Chamber welcomes President Obama to Anchorage and hopes there's an opportunity to experience what resource development means for Alaskan jobs, education, tax revenue, and Alaskan lives. From oil and gas production and mining to forestry, fishing, and tourism, Alaska's destiny lies in its natural resources and its ability to develop them. Thank you for coming north to see our future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Chamber.
President Obama is in Seward today. He landed before noon in his helicopter called Marine One and then hiked to Exit Glacier to highlight how much the rivers of ice in the state are retreating because of global climate change. He called the glacier spectacular and said, "We want to make sure that our grandkids can see this." APRN's Liz Ruskin is traveling with the president today and joins me now. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Lori.
What did the president have to say at Exit Glacier?
Well, at Exit Glacier, he recited the facts about the glacier, about its dramatic retreat, saying it had retreated more than a mile since the 1800s. And, as you said, he called it spectacular and wanted it to be around. And then he took off up the trail and was followed by a crew that we assume was the TV crew from the show Bear Grylls, and he was gone for a couple hours.
Did he take any questions from the media?
He did not take any questions there, and then from Exit Glacier, we drove into downtown Seward. We went into an ice cream shop, and he bought ice cream for some of the press and Ambassador Susan Rice, who's with him on this trip. And then he greeted some of his fans that were lining the streets. And now we're starting out on the boat portion of our trip. At the dock in Seward, he made a speech about icebreakers and how the U.S. fleet of icebreakers has diminished and the need for more. And said much of what the Alaska's congressional delegation have been saying, that, we need the icebreakers and that Russia has a lot more than we do. And the fact that we're down to one heavy icebreaker is not sufficient.
Liz, what's it like being part of the president's press pool? It sounds like it's kind of a scramble over the last couple of days. What's that been like?
It has been a scramble. There's a lot of running around. The motorcade stops and you get out and you run and try to catch up to where the president is. There's a lot of following the president and gathering information and pictures and sound and very little time actually to transmit it and to write stories. For example, up at Exit Glacier, we were there for several hours and we didn't have any access to satellite or Wi-Fi or any kind of communications. So, it's a little bit frustrating to keep reporting and not be able to write stories.
You mentioned that you're getting ready to get on a boat now. What's up next on the president's agenda?
Well, we're getting on the water. We're in a tour boat, and I noticed the Secret Service, and I believe the president is on a Coast Guard cutter. I don't see him right now, but I think we're on a separate boat so that we can photograph him on that and film him and record him on the Coast Guard cutter. I imagine that we're going close to glaciers, and we will probably be on the water for a few hours.
So the entire press pool is on a separate vessel than the president?
Right. I think that helps us take better pictures of him. And
all right. Well, how long, Liz, will you be out? Do you know how long you'll be out touring out on the water?
They told us to expect to be out till 7 p.m., so a couple of hours, but we've been running late all day, so we don't know. We're kind of in White House custody.
APRN's Liz Ruskin is traveling with the president. She says Obama is actually on a tour boat called the Viewfinder, not a Coast Guard cutter. As the president continues to visit sites in Alaska during a trip focused on climate change and Arctic policy, reactions to his speech at the close of the Glacier Conference yesterday are still forming. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the one consistent opinion from energy and environmental advocates alike is displeasure.
Nobody seems totally happy with the president's speech on climate change. Too vague, too bleak, goes too far, doesn't go far enough. Advocates and adversaries of the administration say they just wanted something else.
And it was very, very clear to me that his comments were directed to a national and truly an international audience, and that Alaska was the backdrop.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is critical of the president's agenda in Alaska for focusing so heavily on climate change rather than local concerns like economic and energy issues. But regarding the president's climate change remarks, Murkowski says it isn't fair to clamor for a green energy future without offering a roadmap for getting there.
How do we get there, Mr. President? How do we make this transition? We need to recognize that there has to be a transition plan, and the transition plan cannot be that we price Alaskans out of our economic lifestyle and opportunity here.
Unsurprisingly, that emphasis on not sacrificing economic opportunities attached to development is a view shared by the energy industry. Kara Moriarty is president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, an industry group, and says according to studies from the government's Energy Information Administration, 80% of the nation's energy will come from fossil fuels for the foreseeable future.
We are going to continue to rely on oil and gas for the next several decades, and that gas, oil and gas should come from Alaska. So I think renewables are important, but you also have to remember that solar panels and wind turbines, they require a lot of minerals to make those materials.
For others, though, a lack of particulars in the president's speech was frustrating for different reasons. Cassidy Sharp works for Greenpeace in Washington, D.C., and says the speech itself was fine. But environmental advocates, they want deeds.
When you match that rhetoric up with the actual actions he's taking, one, they're not enough, and then B, they're completely undermined when he approves something like Shell's Arctic drilling plan.
During the Glacier Conference, members of the administration offered an explanation that the Arctic offshore drilling in the Chukchi was approved under President Bush, and that this administration has actually raised standards for permitting and preparedness. Sharp, though, doesn't buy it. She says Obama hasn't been shy about scrapping programs he disagrees with, and yet this one made it all the way through to approval. Even self-professed Obama fans say that when it comes to climate, they haven't seen the president deliver yet.
President Obama has done more than any other president before to address the issue of climate change, but the only problem is it isn't enough.
Rick Steiner is a marine conservation biologist based in Anchorage, and he concedes the president said basically the same thing in his speech.
We're not acting fast enough. So we're making progress, we're just not making it fast enough. But we're not moving fast enough.
Steiner says that the Paris climate talks this December need to be where the administration lays out a credible, legally binding plan for curbing emissions. Still, it's a tall order coming to Alaska to pitch measures aimed at slowing down climate change. The state, Steiner says, is a paradox because it's hitched its economic wagon to the same hydrocarbons that are nibbling away at the shorelines and glaciers. But that, he thinks, makes it a good place for the administration and state to start scrapping the status quo. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The state began enrolling newly eligible residents in the Medicaid program today. That's after the Alaska Supreme Court refused yesterday to temporarily block the state from expanding Medicaid. It was a victory for Governor Bill Walker, who announced this summer he was expanding Medicaid without the approval of the legislature. Lawmakers sued after Walker announced he was going forward without their consent. On Friday, Superior Court Judge Frank Fifner denied the request from lawmakers to halt expansion suspension while the lawsuit moves forward. The Alaska Supreme Court on Monday agreed, saying lawyers for the lawmakers failed to show Fifner erred when denying the motion for a preliminary injunction. The state expects about 20,000 low-income Alaskans, mostly childless adults, to sign up for health care under the first year of Medicaid expansion. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, waiting to catch a glimpse of the president in Seward.
I'm super excited. I think this is the neatest thing that's happened to Seward in like a million years.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Residents of Kotzebue are making final preparations for the president's historic visit above the Arctic Circle tomorrow. KNOM's Matthew Smith says everyone, from fishermen to local leaders, are getting ready for the president's visit and have their own hopes for what he takes away from the trip.
On Monday, all of Kotzebue was putting the finishing touches on cleanup efforts and last-minute planning for President Obama's visit on Wednesday. More than 10 derelict homes had been knocked down as part of the community-wide cleanup effort that saw rusty cars, broken-down snow machines, and more hauled away. But Nelson Grease Jr. was spending Monday afternoon untangling his salmon net.
Yeah, from the last storm, it was pretty high. The water came up and washed my net out, and that's where I'm at.
Nelson says he had a good summer netting chum salmon in Kotzebue's small commercial fishery. He was working out of Kotzebue's North 10th City on Monday, a city-built campground along a sliver of beach, offering fish racks and campsites for rent from May through September. It's how Nelson says he spent his springs and his summers for as long as he can remember.
This is where I was born. Live over down here over 15 years. My parents used to come down here ever since the 70s. Every summer they pretty much come down here. Pretty much springtime they go out hunting ugaluk and seal and out here.
This summer, his camp in the 10th city fell into the water, and it wasn't the first time.
It's eroding. It got my fish rack down here. Dropped it down fall time one time. We put it back up. It's really eroding down the coast, and every time the sand or rocks go down, there's always ice in the bottom on the tundra. So there is lots that's melting. And I'm happy the president is coming. I'm excited.
Nelson isn't the only one talking about climate change in the lead up to Obama's visit.
It's such an honor for him to come to our village to see firsthand our concerns as a Native community up here.
Nicole Stoops is the executive director of the Kotzebue IRA. She says the concerns go beyond impacts to seal hunting and salmon fishing. It's a connection to the land that goes back generations.
It's not such a simple thing to move a community, as there's a lot of cultural ties to where they are now. Just to understand the cultural ties that the people have to the land, as well as finding something that would be logical and reasonable for the community members to feel comfortable on a move to relocate somewhere.
Some of Kotzebue's erosion issues, mainly along Shore Avenue, also known as Front Street, have been dealt with, at least for now. That's according to city manager Derek Martin. After 50 years of half measures, Martin says it was a tremendous effort to finally get it right.
The permanent fix to this erosion problem along Shore Avenue was to install a series of sheet pile bulkhead along 75% of the Shore Avenue there, which provided the necessary infrastructure to prevent further erosion, to protect the roadway. But, you know, this is a fix that worked for this community as part of our erosion problem, as part of our climate change problem here in Kotzebue.
It's a solution Martin says he hopes to showcase during the president's visit, one that can demonstrate the resilience of rural communities, the kind of resilience Kotzebue Mayor Maya Lukin had to call on this weekend.
Welcome to Kotzebue, President Obama. I'm so excited that you came here that my appendix burst.
What started off as nausea on Saturday turned into an emergency medevac to Anchorage, and a quick removal of a dangerously inflamed appendix. Mayor Lukin was out of the hospital by Sunday, but was only able to book a flight back home on Monday night. It's just one of the many challenges about living in rural Alaska that she says she puts up with to continue with her family traditions.
It's a very hard life that people don't quite understand. We choose to live in Kotzebue because it's a beautiful place. It's, you know, above the Arctic Circle. It's a place where you can raise your children to hunt, to fish, to live off the land, and to do what we were taught, you know, from our parents and grandparents.
But while many prepare to press the president on climate change and other issues related to life in rural Alaska, many in Kotzebue just as quickly bring up the elephant in the room, or in this case, the oil rig in the sea. Shell Oil, pursuing exploratory drilling in the Chukchi Sea this summer and staging ships, tugs, crew, and more out of Kotzebue. Some residents say they're opposed to the drilling outright. Others say they're more open to the idea. But on the eve of Obama's visit, focused squarely on climate change, many in Kotzebue are quick to point out the incongruity. A president they're eager to welcome and talk openly with about their needs when it comes to climate change is the same president who's authorized Shell's Arctic drilling. For Nelson, still tending his tangled up fishnets, it's a straightforward issue.
Oil here is not a good place to drill, I guess, because fall time when the ice are coming and the waves getting bigger, and I'm not sure about the cleanup or I think it's going to be pretty hard in the Arctic.
Oil and erosion, subsistence, and climate change solutions. All topics on the minds of Kotzebue leaders and residents on the eve of the president's visit to Alaska's Arctic. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Matthew Smith.
A federal judge in Anchorage has ordered a former EPA official to appear in a case involving whether or not the Environmental Protection Agency acted improperly in the lead-up to the agency's proposed restrictions against the Pebble Mine. As KDLG's Dave Benninger reports, no one seems to know where Philip North or nearly a decade of his official emails are at.
In an order issued last Thursday, Judge H. Russell Holland agreed with the Pebble Partnership that retired EPA ecologist Philip North likely knows more than any others what was transpiring within the agency while the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment was being developed. Mike Heatwell is a spokesperson for Pebble.
We just really want to get a complete picture as to what was going on there, and certainly talking with Mr. North is as a central person in all of this would be very beneficial.
North retired from EPA 2 years ago, having spent his career in Alaska, often around mineral development projects. Pebble alleges that North was instrumental in encouraging agency involvement in Bristol Bay, perhaps several years prior to a 2010 request by area tribes. Pebble has obtained hundreds of pages of emails and other documents it says shows improper coordination between EPA and various groups and scientists opposed to the mine, which is the subject of the lawsuit in federal court. But Pebble says they have very little paper trail from Mr. North's involvement. EPA now says North's emails from 2002 to 2010 were lost when his computer hard drive allegedly crashed. Heatwell says that has raised a lot of questions.
We were not told about the emails crashing until the eve of a congressional hearing into this matter. And then in the course of the various court cases here, we find out that there was at least one zip drive that was encrypted, and nobody knows what is really on that or why level of encryption was necessary. And that just adds to the, the intrigue, if you will.
More than just the emails are missing. The EPA has told Congress it does not know where Mr. North went after his retirement. It was reported he was taking his family sailing or may have gone overseas to New Zealand or Australia. Heatwell says Pebble doesn't know where North is either.
It was probably part of the decision behind filing the documents with the court to seek to compel testimony to be able to have an opportunity to ask a lot of questions of him as to what was really his role and what was going on, and trying to get a more complete picture, again, of what was happening inside the EPA relative to their actions against us.
Pebble filed the motion for the subpoena, which Judge Holland granted last week. In his motion, Holland said EPA's rebuttal to the motion, quote, bristles with commentary, but offered no basis for opposing the subpoena. In a footnote, Holland added that some of Pebble's observations with respect to Mr. North are, quote, just a bit inflammatory, and that EPA's comments were, quote, not at all helpful. Philip North has been ordered to appear for a deposition in Anchorage on November 12th. Judge Holland allowed part of Pebble's lawsuit against EPA to proceed, and that case is still in the discovery phase. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
On Friday, Governor Bill Walker issued a disaster declaration for Sitka. On August 18th, 7 landslides caused extensive damage to private and public property, including city roads and utilities. 3 men died. And now that the worst of the emergency is over, the city is facing the question of how to pay for the response. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
With this declaration, Sitka can now access the $2 million Disaster Relief Fund, managed by the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. This is City Administrator Mark Gorman.
It looks like a lot of our cost to date in responding to the emergency will be covered, both labor and contractors. So we're very, very encouraged by this declaration.
In a letter to the legislature, Walker said he would cap relief at $1 million for the moment, but that the incident is ongoing and total recovery costs are unknown. According to Gorman, the cost of Sitka's emergency response alone is estimated to be over $500,000.
We mobilized the contractor community. We had numerous excavators out there, heavy equipment, and that comes at a very high price tag.
Jeremy Zedek is with the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He says families can apply for funding from the Individual Assistance Program. But, he says, houses under construction, which includes a handful of damaged properties in the Kramer Avenue area, will likely not qualify.
It is a kind of a program of last resorts. When people don't have any other assistance to turn to, they can turn to the state program. And in the case of a homeowner that has another home to go and reside in, that becomes what they need to do and not use the state's individual family grant program.
State officials will be in Sitka Wednesday and Thursday to walk city officials and families through the process of procuring disaster relief funding. A verification team with the Division of Homeland Security has reached out to some affected Sitkans already, but Zedek said there are many who still qualify and should apply. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Duck season opens today. An outbreak of pandemic bird flu in the lower 48 has wildlife managers monitoring migratory waterfowl nationwide, including in Alaska, where it has not yet been detected. KSKA's Monica Goki reports.
Earlier this year, a hunter in Washington state shot a green-winged teal that tested positive for pathogenic bird flu. Since then, it's been detected in most other western states and several midwestern states, which means efforts to monitor the current outbreak are well underway. Dan Rosenberg with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is the statewide waterfowl coordinator.
It's not likely we're going to find birds in Alaska with highly pathogenic avian influenza, but the possibility is always there.
There are 2 active flu strains being dubbed highly pathogenic right now, but Rosenberg clarifies that terminology.
Highly pathogenic refers to their effects on poultry. It's not in reference to effects on wild birds or on humans.
Fish and Game says it's largely business as usual. Hunters should abide by a lot of the normal protocol for safe game handling.
We are always advising hunters not to handle or eat obviously sick birds.
Wear rubber gloves or disposable latex gloves when you handle birds. Wash your hands, knives, and countertops after handling waterfowl. And
don't eat, drink, or smoke while you're handling animals, so there isn't that tendency to take your hand from the bird to the food to your mouth. And then thoroughly cook birds. to 165 degrees Fahrenheit.
Bird hunters in the Palmer Hayflats and the Anchorage Coastal Wildlife Refuge may run into field technicians asking for samples from hunter-shot birds. Also new this year, the price of a federal duck stamp goes from $15 to $25. And in Alaska, the rules for exactly who needs a federal duck stamp have changed. Find more information on those updates and more on our website at alaskapublic.org. In Anchorage, I'm Monica Goki.
Crowds lined the Seward Highway below the city's airport this morning in anticipation of a glimpse of President Obama's arrival. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, a glimpse was about all they got.
Officials closed the Seward Highway for more than an hour, about a half mile on either side of the intersection with Exit Glacier Road. Despite the distance, crowds parked and walked as far as they could, standing across the road from the airport, hoping to get a look at the president when he landed.
You have to just go to the other side of the street more, please. What do you got there?
I'm a reporter. I'm taping the helicopter.
Oh, okay.
Overhead, a military helicopter circled, then circled again. The three Osprey military aircraft sent in for security purposes flew in, looking like science fiction come to life, wingtips at right angles and rotor blades whirling as they landed one by one in advance of the president. Seward folks were standing proud, eager to see Obama if they could.
I'm just glad that the president's going to be here. I think it's very exciting. I'm glad to see everybody's out and in a good mood, and it's a beautiful day and very excited.
I'm super excited. I think this is the neatest thing that's happened to Seward in like a million years. It's just cool. And it's a beautiful day, and I mean, you know, what better way to welcome the president?
But Obama's plan to tape a reality show with a British outdoorsman while in Seward drew some amused comments.
Do you guys know who this Bear Grylls even is? Somebody from Alabama. My friend Tammy had to tell me.
Yeah, I don't even watch it.
Is that
for real?
It's for real.
He's taping with him here in your hometown.
Yeah, there's enough people here that know the real thing that you don't need to import amateurs.
After more than an hour, the big historic moment finally came. And just like that, the motorcade flashed by and was gone in less than a minute. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Ellen Lockyer in Seward, Matthew Smith in Kotzebue, Zachariah Hughes and Monica Goki in Anchorage, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Alaska Chamber welcomes President Obama to Anchorage and hopes there's an opportunity to experience what resource development means for Alaskan jobs, education, tax revenue, and Alaskan lives. From oil and gas production and mining to forestry, fishing, and tourism, Alaska's destiny lies in its natural resources and its ability to develop them. Thank you for coming north to see our future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Chamber. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.